Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. Presented by the FTN Network. Breaking down NFL action with the info you need to crush your fantasy leagues.
Welcome back, everybody, for another episode of the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. Y'all know who it is. It's your boy, Ray G. You can find me on Twitter at Ray GQ. That's Q-U-E. And I am joined by the new host of this show, co-host, host. They're interchangeable with us, too. It's Josh Larkey, the chief analytics officer, the new kid on the block over at FTN. And you can find all of his work and content on Twitter at JLarkeyTweets. That's T-W-E-E-T-S. Y'all know who it is, so I don't need to give you his Twitter handle, but if you're not following Josh, make sure you do that. Follow FTN Network, FTN Fantasy, FTN Bets, FTN Daily, FTN Data. So much dope stuff going on at FTN. Josh, you had a really big win last night in the DFS world. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty well. So I was using Mr. Jeff Ratcliffe's USFL projections on FTN Daily, and I happened to win 10 grand, got second place in their big tournament. It was actually, I was joking on Twitter, it was the longest 24 hours of my life. It was a Sunday slate, and it was three games. The third game got weather postponed to Monday. So I was sitting in first place, winning $25,000, and then had to wait a full day for the final game to be played. Ended up, I was actually in the first spot, winning the 25K. I think it was garbage time happened. I ended up getting the 10K second place by 0.22 fantasy points. I'm not going to do any analytics on that, but I've heard that's a very small number. So, you know what? Pour one out for the 15K. But the rumors have it that the person who won, this guy Jake, is actually an FTN subscriber. So, you know what? Can't even be that mad. He deserved it. But I'm happy to be here. And I think we've got a good show for the people. You actually reached out on Twitter and you sent me a thread that I had actually just read like 20 minutes before you sent it. It was talking about early declare receivers versus receivers that are non-early declares. Basically just were they in school for 3 years and then hit the NFL, or more than 3 years and then hit the NFL. So we're going to talk about that. We've got a couple dynasty buys and sells to discuss, since that's very relevant. I mean, the NFL draft's next week. So, yeah, I'm excited to get started.
Yeah, man, it should be a good show. You know, we're at this stage of the process, man, where the NFL draft is so close to, you know, happening. It's, you know, what, 8 days away. And it's like this restless period. There's smoke screens. There's bullshit. There's things that maybe we're not paying attention to that we should. Larkey, the new hot thing is who's been invited to the draft, who's showing up, who's not going. But I'm excited to have this conversation with you about these wide receivers who may be a little bit older. What should we be looking at? Does it really matter when they quote unquote break out? And, you know, what does that mean and why breakout is important, and sort of define, you know, what that means? Because that can be very different the way that I view breakout compared to how, you know, historical data and the numbers, you know, point to a breakout for these wide receivers. So I'm just excited to talk about this with you tonight. One of the best in the game. So hopefully we'll all learn a little something listening to you this evening.
Sounds good. Also, before we keep going, producers in my ear letting me know that I have to plug the promo code. We have a new promo code for the show. It's generic. It's promo code Larkey, L-A-R-K-Y. You can use that and sign up for any of the FTN stuff, and you're going to get 20% off your package per month, basically for perpetuity. That's what I'm being told right now, is that we don't actually have a cap on that time limit. Maybe it kicks in at some point. You've got it for at least a year, maybe for life. So promo code Larkey if you want to sign up for anything new. Get that USFL, get those projections from Jeff Ratcliffe. We've got an entire fleet of people working day in, day out on the MLB and the NBA side of things. We'll have NFL, a ton of content kicking off. I mean, it's already kicked off, but we're going to have more and more kicking off as it gets closer to the season. So yeah, producer in my ear. I had to get that out there. So
got to.
People might be like, oh, like promo code Larkey, you using that other places? No, I actually, you won't see me talk about that anywhere else other than the podcast, because we're trying to figure out what this audience thinks about our show. So we have to keep a very exclusive promo code. So I'm wasting my promo code on a podcast for single use. Let's see how this goes. Anyway, on a serious note, we can dive into this early declare conversation. So I did a little coding in R, pulled a few numbers, and essentially I was like, should we be concerned if a player plays more than 3 years in college or not? And I felt like the best way to do it is, let's just look at recent wide receivers that have had very, very impactful fantasy seasons, and then just say, okay, was this guy an early declare or not? So I looked at the past three seasons initially. So we're just looking at 2019, 2020, 2021. And I looked at receivers who played at least 12 games and scored at least 15 PPR points. So these are the kind of seasons that can actually help you win your league. Like, sure, you could flex a guy that's giving you 10, 11, 12 fantasy points a game. Is that the player that's really helping you win your league? Are they actually all that much better than what's on the waiver wire or your bench? Probably not if they're scoring 10, 11 points. So I upped it to 15 points, and 52 wide receiver seasons have happened in the past 3 years. 52 seasons with 15 or more PPR points. And out of those 52 seasons, they were done by 33 receivers. 20 of those 33 were early declares. So already, like, the warning bells might be going off a little bit. Like, wow, there's more that are early declares than non-early declares. But as we dive into it, I think it's a lot more than just early declare or not. It seemed to me like you kind of wanted a good reason. So we can talk through, I'll just name these players as we're going. I'll just go in alphabetical order, and then we can kind of talk about, like, is this something that you think is repeatable? Would you be concerned about a guy like this? So at the top of the list, we got three names with AJ Brown, Amari Cooper, Allen Robinson. They were all early declares. And then the past 3 years, Adam Thielen, who's been pretty incredible in fantasy, the ageless wonder, he was not an early declare. He was a four-year player at Minnesota State University. Do you think he and hit, like, his path is something that can be replicated? Since when I look at him, I'm not necessarily sure if I'm, like, chomping at the bit to find the next Adam Thielen as a prospect. Like, would you ever, in a good way, compare a prospect to Adam Thielen? Maybe you would. Maybe I'm just an idiot and I don't like Adam Thielen's prospect profile enough. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, and this is where the film and the analytics, I don't even want to say come to a crossroad. I think most of the time, for me, when I'm comparing or making the comparison to a collegiate wide receiver to an NFL, it's play style, right? Like, it's very hard to, on film, find the next whatever that may be, right? The next Ja'Marr Chase, the next Adam Thielen. I think more so, at least in my opinion, I hope the people who rely on film to do their analysis, they're using play style when they're comparing players, because I don't think I'm looking for the next wherever the Minnesota State wide receiver guy and I'm going to bet on him in rookie drafts to become that. Hell no.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We'll keep going down the list. I'll read the next few names. Brandon Ayuk, Brandon Cooks, Chris Godwin, and Cooper Kupp. And of those, Ayuk and Kupp, they were both four-year players in college. We had Ayuk, he had 2 years at a junior college, then he transferred to Arizona. And then we had Kupp, who was just a four-year standout at Eastern Washington. I want to say he had like 1,700 yards as a freshman there.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Do you have anything about those guys? It seems to me like you could kind of pin on like a JC or small school with them.
Yeah, I think the only, I guess, a little bit concerning thing with Ayuk was he spent 2 years at a JUCO, then he transferred to a P5 school, and then he didn't do anything in that initial transfer year, and then it wasn't until that final season, so like year two in the P5 where he broke out, whereas ideally you would like to see, and I know it's a different position, but the players go directly from JUCO, hit the P5 scene, and dominate that first season in Division One, which I don't know if that's predictive at all. It's just an interesting tidbit about him. Whereas Cooper Kupp, he just dominated at a small school for, you know, his entirety of the time that he was there.
So follow-up question, because you played a little college ball yourself. So someone comes to the team, they transfer. what's that learning curve like? Since I think that's something that I've always wondered is, so like when I see that a player transfers, or we're looking at prospects in this class, there's a lot of them that had that transferred at some point. What is that ramp up like in terms of like how many months do you think is needed? Obviously, like running back probably don't need as much time as receiver, but from your experience, like did you have players on your team that transferred or anything like that where you have that insight firsthand?
I'll just tell you this, and this is whether it's transfer or true freshman season production. Most of the times, I'm not going to say all the time, but most of the time, if you are good enough as a freshman, they will play you. You know, that most of the time, if you are good enough to perform, and I played at the Division II and 1AA level, so I'm not even talking P5, right? Most of the time, if you are good enough, we've seen true freshmen even this past season, you will play. There's no reason to redshirt an asset that can immediately help your team win. And then on the JUCO route, if a JUCO transfer came in to like when we were there, like your first year, you're a little bit nervous, like, damn, JUCO coming in. But if he doesn't start right away, you're just like, oh, this dude's really just, he's not that good, right? Like you transferred in, you had 2 years of prep, you come in and you still can't get on the field. Again, I don't want to speak in absolutes, but normally if you're that guy coming from a JUCO, you're playing right away. There's no sit down and wait and let's learn and get you acclimated. There's plenty of time. You've got months on end. You're already more developed than a true sophomore or true freshman. If you're a transfer and can't play right away, that's normally, well, I'll just say more times than not, it's probably not a good indicator of talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's kind of why I was a little bit concerned about Ayuk coming into the NFL. I mean, I think he is a good player. Since like we talked about last time with like the Kadarius Toney versus Amon-Ra St. Brown, if you play well in the NFL, I don't really care at that point what you did in college. It's like, all right, well, why would I hang on to Ayuk struggling in his first year when he transferred, when we saw him put up a pretty dominant rookie season. Now I've got one more name for you. This isn't even a receiver off the cuff. Kenneth Walker. Is it more impressive to you that he goes from Wake Forest, transfers Michigan State, and then he has over 1,600 rushing yards in his first season at Michigan State? Is that, so like if you look at that, obviously like we're not necessarily like, oh, I love when players transfer.
Right.
That's not necessarily what you want. But had he done that, had he played 3 years at Michigan State and popped in year three, is that less impressive than him being at Wake Forest for 2 years and then popping in year three, transferring to Michigan State? Or are you like, no, I wish you were at this program instead the whole time? How do you even view that?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, man. The fact that he was like, you saw flashes of talent on tape, like at Wake Forest, you saw flashes, but for whatever reason, it just never clicked for him there. The fact that there was like zero sort of acclimation period for him. Trey Sermon is a good example of that, Larky. When he transferred from Oklahoma to Ohio State, whether it's injury, make whatever excuse you want. Like he didn't do anything like in the entire season. And it was like the last 4 weeks where he got an opportunity and then he smashed and people went nuts over Trey Sermon. So the fact that Kenneth Walker transferred in and immediately hit the ground running literally and dominated, you know, in a higher level of competition. Yes, I know the ACC is still P5, but the Big Ten is a little more better competition that Kenneth Walker had to go up against, and he just dominated. That's, I know there's some questions, but that's pretty damn impressive, man.
All right, we're going back to receivers. So here's a few more receivers, early declare, non-early declare. So four guys that were all early declares: Calvin Ridley, Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, DK Metcalf, DJ Moore. There's a lot of early declares here. And then we hit Devontae Parker. And he's, I think, to me at least, I mean, I wasn't in the fantasy analyst game when Devontae Parker was coming out of college. But when I pull up the numbers, he wasn't overly impressive until that senior season. What were you thinking about Parker coming out? I feel like also like 2014 is like eons ago in terms of where all of us are at. But something like that, is that, I mean, I think I wrote it down. It was like 140. He had 142 receiving yards a game as a senior, but he didn't really do much until that point.
Yeah.
So when you're watching tape, if there's someone like a Parker, how do you try and adjust that as a film guy? Since I'll kind of adjust it mathematically, where I'm not even taking into account anything about how the guy wins. So I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that I'm just going to be missing in that kind of process. So like, when you're watching, what are you looking for? If you know that the guy is probably older than his competition, or like if you're watching a freshman who isn't producing like the seniors on his team, but it's like, well, he's a freshman. So like, how are you adjusting that mentally?
I think the most positive way is when you have a freshman who's just so dominant right away, you're just like, man, if this kid is this good now at 18, we've got a kid right now who is dominant at 17 years old in a P5 school, which is insane. But you're just thinking like, man, by the time he's draft eligible, it's just going to be, he should just be an absolute monster. Conversely, with the older prospects, I guess what I want to see is if you are older, don't just hit the threshold and be like, oh, he hit it, so it's good. Like, you should absolutely dominate. Like, it should be, you should do what you intended to do. If you came back for your senior season, you wanted to prove a point. Whether you got a poor draft grade or you felt like there were some things that you needed to work on, which would yield to probably a poor draft grade, go out there and, like, dominate. Don't go out there and pussyfoot around and just be kind of average, be middle of the pack. If you're a senior-level prospect, you should dominate everybody you face. And I think we saw that with, like, a Najee Harris, Devontae Smith off recent memory. I know we'll talk about Chris Olave, but, you know, my issue with him is he didn't dominate in his final season. And I think there are other players on his team who were more impressive than he was, which for me, although maybe he met it and it's okay, and maybe I think you'll get into something about that one in a second, but for me, when I watched him on Saturdays, I mean, he was third option in the pecking order sometimes behind Garrett Wilson and Smith and Jigba, so just a little concerning. I know he played other seasons, but in that final season, I want you to dominate. Do what you should do as a senior, which is dominate these young kids.
So it's interesting you brought him up. Before we get back to the early declare, non-early declare, current NFL players, Olave is an interesting one because when I look at him statistically, obviously I would have preferred if he came out early because we're having this whole early declare conversation. But that just, if I didn't even know how old he was, his stats were better as a junior than a senior. Like he had over 100 yards per game as a junior. And then that dropped to like 85, which I mean, like it's not like he was struggling as a junior, right. But in the context of this Ohio State offense, it was definitely a step down. So I think he's an interesting one where it's almost like the analytics community crushes him because he stayed in school. And then you on film just felt like he wasn't even necessarily as much of a focal point when he's older than everybody else out there. Because Wilson was not, he is an early declare. He's actually younger. So interesting with Olave. So definitely some potential concerns there with him. Other receivers that have hit this 15 PPR per game threshold or higher the last 3 years. Julian Edelman, early declare quarterback. We can probably just throw that one out. Justin Jefferson, early declare. Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, all early declares. And then we hit Kenny Golladay. Golladay, 2 years at North Dakota, then 2 years at Northern Illinois. And for me, when I look at Golladay, what I like is that he had over 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns as a junior at Northern Illinois. And it's not like that excuses him from staying in college 4 years fully for my type of process. But at least for me, he showed that before he was significantly older than all of his competition, that kind of like the Kenneth Walker thing, that he can go in on day one and be dominant. And I at least think it's probably more impressive when a receiver does that. How long does that connection take? If let's say that it's a college program, a receiver that is clearly better than everyone else on the team comes in as a transfer. How many practices do you think it actually takes till the quarterback goes, you know what, this is actually my favorite target, and we have enough chemistry where I'm going to throw this guy, like, he's getting the most targets come Saturday.
Yeah, it shouldn't take long in college. I mean, I don't want to like be very simplistic here, but it's college, man. I mean, it's literally, hey, Josh Larkey, your quarterback, throw the ball to him. Like we, like he's your one. Like that's the read, right? If you're that guy, it shouldn't take long at all because defenses aren't running press man all day in college. A lot of zone coverage, off coverage. These coaches can scheme these players in advantageous situations and positions, so it should not take long for you to acclimate when you train in that college level. It shouldn't take long at all.
Okay, this podcast has just turned to me interrogating you and just learning about the college experience. I'm enjoying this. Everyone's sitting there listening. Tomorrow is going to be like, what's going what sign up for an interrogation? What? So actually a follow-up question on that now, since my wheels are turning. So the receivers that have a top quarterback prospect as their quarterback, I can see this offense, maybe they're looking first, second, third, maybe even fourth read on a certain play. If you're one of these receivers that deals with poor quarterback play, how simplistic is that playbook going to be? Because like I have absolutely no idea what a college play call is going to be like if you have some type of adequate receivers that might play in the NFL, but you know that the quarterback is severely holding the offense back. So like, are you basically just saying kind of like you said, it's like, oh, like come Saturday, like just throw that dude the fucking ball. Like we're not going to mess around with this. What are those plays even going to be like?
For those quarterbacks, go look at Treylon Burks's wide receiver stats for Arkansas, and that'll tell you everything you need to know. I mean, it's literally one read, and a lot of these guys have athletic type quarterbacks. So it's RPO. If the guy's not there, you know, run or throw it away or run more times than not. If you're looking for stellar quarterback play, early morning college football games are not what you want to watch. I mean, it is one read. They might progress to the two. But they're not under center, dropping back on a five-step drop and surveying the defense. It's here's your one. If your one's not there, run. You know, maybe you've got one that's good enough to get the second read. But outside of Bryce Young and a couple of other guys, nobody's back there surveying a defense and dissecting based on matchup. It's just not happening.
So you think that's part of why? So I see this in the stats where guys that are not at the top programs will often have these pretty outrageous yardage shares where they might have like 40-50% of the team's receiving yards. Whereas like, sure, like if you're at Alabama, you're playing with really good players, but also you just don't really see the best players at a school like that ever getting like this 40%, 45% yardage share. And it's not like they necessarily even have to have that many more receivers on the field. So is that part of it where it's like, we have a quarterback that can actually survey the field and we don't just have to tell him, hey, like throw to the guy on the left over and over again.
I think that's why I don't think people appreciate. First of all, I don't think most people appreciate how good Joe Burrow was in that 2019 season. We like to point to Jamar and Justin, but the fact that he supported like five pass catching weapons in college is insane. And not just supported them. I mean, Jefferson over 110 receptions, Chase over 1,500 yards or 1,800 yards. It was just what Clyde, 50-plus receptions, Thaddeus Moss, 40 receptions, Terrace Marshall had a bunch of catches. And then you look at Mac Jones, and, you know, when we were going through the whole exercise last year, his efficiency and just how good he was at distributing the ball in the collegiate level, watching that, I said it back in October, Larky. I was like, this dude's going to be a first-round pick. Like, everyone laughed me off of Twitter when I said that. I was like, this dude's going to be a first-round pick. He's just dropping back and just going through, like, it was a lot of Devontae Smith, but whatever he wanted to do offensively, Mac Jones could do. So when you have those guys that can dissect and survey, I'm not saying that's the way to project because I don't think anybody really knows how to find good quarterbacks, but it was hard for me to envision a world in which those kind of guys failed at the NFL level because of just how proficient they were in college, you know, and doing it in the SEC, which is the highest breeding ground for NFL talent that we have on the face of the planet, is the Southeastern Conference of Football.
So I just took a couple notes as you were talking, and I feel like one of the elusive pieces of this draft process is the scouting the quarterback, and that if you really know what you're looking for, that you're going to be probably better than the, like you're definitely going to be better than the person that's not. Like, I'm sure that if we're watching film, you're going to evaluate quarterbacks way better than I am. But if we switch to something like running back or receiver, and we're just watching film, you're going to blow me out of the water. It won't even be close. Because at least with quarterback, there's enough randomness where, like, you won't...
Yep.
You're not going to hit on all those quarterbacks in terms of knowing, like, who's actually going to crush at the NFL level.
Yep.
Whereas, like, with running back receiver, I would have no idea what I'm looking at, and you would just absolutely destroy me. So I wrote that down just in terms of an interesting stats thing to check out at some point would be kind of what that... how spread out that target distribution is in college, and that potentially, like, when it's pretty spread out, does that sort of indicate that this quarterback's an actual potentially NFL caliber processor? So I like that. That's as I'm thinking about it.
That's interesting.
Cause I've always wondered how I could capture that statistically, like how the guy's processing. Cause like when I look at Burrow, I'm just like, oh yeah, like, threw a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, good quarterback rating or whatever. Like I'll just look at the stats and go, wow, this guy really was dominant. But I think that could be kind of a good intermediate piece where the quarterbacks get drafted often, they all have pretty good stats. You're not really seeing guys get drafted when it's like, oh, he threw for 2,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, and 13 interceptions. That's not really the guy that's getting drafted. And if he's getting drafted, they're switching him to running back or receiver. So... I think that's an interesting one that I think I might have to investigate a little after hours at some point.
Yeah, do a little dive on that. And it's too much to get into here, but I think there are some other pitfalls to avoid as well, because some teams like a Mike Leach offense that only runs the ball 4 times a game and all they do is throw it 70 times, there's probably going to be a high level of distribution because that's the offensive style. But I'm pretty sure if you narrowed it down to like the average or median and kind of look at the quarterbacks and see which ones had that high completion percentage or distribution, it'd be interesting to see what that looks like. It would. I'd be interested to see that. I don't know if there's any correlation, but you may be onto something, Larky.
Yeah, it'd probably be like high completion percentage while also not having like one or two guys just so clearly at the top, since I think you see that a lot at the small schools. And I didn't really think too much about it until just now. I always was kind of like, oh, like there's this one really good receiver at a small school, since I'm not really looking at small school stats unless I'm studying one of the players who might get drafted from that school. So it's like, oh, this guy had a ton of receiving yards compared to everyone else at the school, when that probably reflects in two ways. The one way that I thought about is this receiver might actually be good. But then I guess the other one is, well, this quarterback's probably pretty bad. Yeah. And they were just told, hey, this one guy might play in the NFL one day, and our best shot at winning games is you just throw it to him every single time that you think you can.
And that's what, Larky, that's what happens, man. I mean, I'm done after this. Treylon Burks had 66 receptions this year. The next closest had 24. You know, that's the next closest receiver at 24 catches. So Treylon Burks, you know, damn near tripled this guy up. And you look down the list of those Arkansas pass catchers, just one, is it the quarterback is that bad, or are the weapons that bad? I don't know. Interesting thought piece, though.
I mean, now we have to stick on this. So I just pulled it up. So Treylon Burks, 1,104 receiving yards this past season. Second was Tyson Morris with 337. So not 1,100, 337. Then 304, then 252, then 183, and so on. So, I mean, you can take, like, the first, I don't know, like, what, those next, like, 4 dudes all combined for basically what, it was roughly, like, the next 4 guys on the list had Treylon Burks receiving yards. If you sum up those next 4. So,
wow.
That's a really good example where I wouldn't even think of Arkansas necessarily as, like, oh, like, this tiny program or anything. It's a pretty established one, but that's probably a great example right there. Where it's like probably a bad quarterback, and then also just how good was Burks?
Yeah,
they entrusted him to be pretty much their entire.
And Josh, you don't think other college coaches knew that shit going into the game plan? Like, I don't think people understand how impressive that is when they the offense and the defense know what's going to happen. Like Drake London, another great, like I know they're going to throw to him every time and you still can't stop it. That's just, again, just throwing that out there, man.
That's another good point. Yeah, the defenses probably weren't too worried about, I assume, wide receiver two in that offense, Tyson Morris, with his 24 catches for 337 yards and two tutties. So, yeah, that's a very good point. All right, moving on, let's talk about a few more current NFL receivers. I think one thing you'll also notice as you're listening in, everyone, a lot of these non-early declares are just not quite as good outside of Cup. A lot of these guys seem a little more like a potential flash in the pan, like Kenny Golladay, the star. It was bright, and it burned out pretty quickly. Whereas like these other guys like DJ Moore, Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, all these, Justin Jefferson, these are guys where they're going to have these crazy long careers, and they're successful year after year. So keep going down the list. Mike Evans, early declare. And then we hit Michael Gallup, non-early declare. So right there, it's like, oh, Michael Gallup probably, I mean, I know you're a Cowboys fan, but I think we can both agree he's probably not in the same conversation as a Mike Evans. Then we get Michael Thomas, and he, to me, just feels like the greatest outlier because he played 4 years in college because he redshirted as a sophomore at Ohio State. Do you have anything to add on that? I couldn't find too much info on, like, what the heck was going on there. Probably pretty embarrassing for the coaching staff with who he's become.
Yeah, that just seems like a clusterfuck.
And then we had Robert Woods early declare. We had Stephon Diggs early declare. Tyreek Hill, I don't think we need to talk about him too much. Like, there was discipline stuff. He sort of played 4 years in college. He transferred two different times. That's just, stop chasing the next Tyreek Hill. That's a weird one. We had Tyler Lockett, who was a four-year player. He had over 1,250 yards with 11 touchdowns as a junior at Kansas State. Then he came back for his fourth year and put up crazy numbers again. So I think if we're trying to make comparisons between players in this class, who is that? Is that like a Olave, Dotson, Wilson in terms of these small, really fast receivers where there's potentially some hope that they can also play on the outside? Who is there anyone that you think is like most comparable to someone like a Lockett, where I assume the reason Lockett didn't come out early is because of his size. Very small.
Yep. He was a special teams monster at Kansas State. I don't think I'd compare any of these receivers to sort of Lockett. I think Dotson would maybe be the most comparable, but I do like the parallels of, and I still think there are people who now question Lockett being a wide receiver one. Is he a one, or is he a really, 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 really good two? I think production would say he's a one, but I still think the perception of who Tyler Lockett is, I don't think most people view him as a one. If you rolled into the season with Tyler Lockett as your wide receiver one, you probably wouldn't feel great. But I think that's sort of an arc of Olave. Like, I have concerns about him being a one at the next level, but maybe he's got the skill set combined with the athleticism to produce, you know, low-end wide receiver one numbers. I think that's actually a really good career arc comparison with Olave.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett, I think the issue with him from a dynasty perspective, it's not even that he doesn't give you production now, which he does, but if you look at his early career, this guy had no value in dynasty. When you produce like Lockett did, where you have such a slow start and it takes you year after year after year to break out, then by the time that you break out, when he's what, like 26, 27, everyone's like, oh, the cliff is coming with his age. And you can never actually get a ton of value out of him. So it's not even like, yeah, you're getting the Tyler Lockett fantasy points when they happen. But in terms of dynasty, we're looking at players that will accrue value when we're taking guys in our rookie draft. Like, you're never drafting a guy like, well, I hope this guy loses value his first 3 years. So I wonder if, is that a concern you have with someone like Olave, where the production comes later, or the capped ceiling? Since from my perspective, he's a tough one, because part of me is just like, well, the guy was really productive as a junior, over 100 yards, and he's really fast. I'm not too concerned. But then the other part of me is like, well, like, even if I don't understand why he went back to college, he did go back, and then he just wasn't as dominant as he should have been.
Yeah, I think the difference is, what was Tyler Lockett's draft? Where was he drafted? Was he a third-round pick? I believe Lockett was a third rounder.
Yeah, I know he was later. Third round. You know,
I think the difference is Olave is going to get the requisite draft capital to get the opportunity. So I don't think he'll get his if Olave stinks for 2 years, like in a row, if his first 2 years are slow or he's not very good, I don't even think he'll have the value. The difference was Lockett wasn't really thought of as supposed to be much, and then he just kind of grinded his way up to all pro level, whereas Olave is probably going to have more expectation right out of the gate to be a guy, and if he fails at that 2 years, I don't think he's going to have any much value going into year three.
Got it. All right, next we had Terry McLaurin. To me, he's just like the ultimate outlier because he's one of the few names on this list where I feel like he's a non-early declare, and in no way does he feel like a flash in the pan. It's not like the Galladay or the Gallup where you're like, you know what, they probably, like those one or two seasons, it's not like they're bad players now, but you're like, that's probably the best that they're going to reach. Like Brandon Ayuk, I think, has those similar questions now where it's like, oh, was that rookie season, is that going to be the best we saw from Brandon Ayuk? And those concerns, like you never want those in Dynasty. It suppresses the player's value. It also suppresses the fantasy points on your team if they're just not producing like you hoped they would. So I kind of think of McLaurin at this point. I feel like he gets the free pass. I have no concerns with him and how he literally didn't do anything until his senior season. You feel similarly? He seems like in 3 years, I think he's going to be very productive.
Legit. Listen, film nor analytics are 100%. We just all missed. Like, he's just good. Like, I think film expert or not, Larky, the data and you watch him play, you're like, okay, that guy's good. Like, that guy's fucking good. I don't know how he fell through the cracks. I don't know, but he's good. So, yes, he's not a flash in the pan. He is in fact, good. Outlier, we all missed. He's good.
The next one's Mike Williams, and I'm not even going to fully include him as the non-early declare because I looked into it since I thought there was the injury. Mike Williams fractured a bone in his neck game one of his junior season. He had over 1,000 yards as a sophomore. The dude's massive. I think he would have been drafted after year three. I think it was Clemson. So not going to worry too much about Mike Williams. That's just like how many dudes are fracturing bones in their neck game one of junior season. Deontay Johnson, he also, like Michael Thomas, he had the redshirt sophomore season. Though technically his like second/third season, he had nearly 1,300 yards and 13 touchdowns. Deontay, I think, very good for a long time. So he's probably like the next guy. Like, I think probably he and McLaurin, those two non-early declares where you can probably expect some pretty elite fantasy production for seasons to come. Next, we have Debo. He's a very interesting one. And I think part of it's like kind of how he became so ridiculously fantasy relevant this past year. So he broke his leg his junior year. And I think that's why he played as a senior. So we'll actually talk about him a little bit more later. Do you have anything to add on that? I think he probably would have declared after junior year, right? If he didn't break his leg.
Maybe. The South Carolina was maybe, but probably. But I don't think he would have gotten drafted as high as he did after his senior season because he wouldn't have been able to. He built his stuff up at that Senior Bowl. He got a lot of hype after going to that Senior Bowl and destroying people. So if he didn't graduate, he wouldn't have been eligible for the Senior Bowl, so he would have had to rely on the pre-draft process to get the draft capital. And I don't know if he was getting drafted in round two after his junior season.
That's right. I forgot. Yeah, he had one of the most legendary Senior Bowls ever. Yep. Right when you said that, I was like, oh, you know what? I wasn't there, but I feel like I was there because when people talk about it, it's like him, Goddard. There's a few guys where it's just like this legendary Senior Bowl where I can't believe what they did while they were there.
Yep.
Next, we have T. Higgins, Jalen Waddle, Jamar Chase. End of list. Those are all early declares and the final guys that have had a super fantasy relevant season the past 3 years. So I think one thing to note, kind of like what I mentioned before, these non-early declares, most of them just aren't quite as good in Dynasty and Fantasy. And then the next exercise that I did is kind of building off that. I had that question. I was like, oh, are these kind of more the flash in the pan receivers, the non-early declares that are staying 4 or 5 years in college? So then I looked at receivers who had 15 or more points per game in PPR the last 6 years. So 2016 through 2021, I only wanted to look at guys who hit 15 points per game twice. That way, like, I'm just going to harp on Michael Gallup. I'm sorry, Cowboys fans. Sorry, Ray. So Michael Gallup, his 1,100-yard season was just ridiculous. But since then, I mean, there's been some injuries, but also he just hasn't been commanding the targets like you might have thought he should based on that year. Michael Gallup, that was his one season. So there's a lot of guys where you can start weeding them out. And there have been 19 receivers the past 6 years who were two of those seasons, they were 15 or more fantasy points a game. 19. 15 of those 19 left college after 3 years. I think that's really like a big example of this original topic when we were like, oh, we should probably look more into the early declare versus non-early declare. And this list, really short, the non-early or the early declares would be Allen Robinson, Antonio Brown, Brandon Cooks, Calvin Ridley, Chris Godwin, Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, Julian Edelman, Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, Larry Fitzgerald, Mike Evans, OBJ, Robert Woods, Stephon Diggs. That sounds like an incredible group to me. And then the four that were not early declares is Thielen, as we talked about before. Michael Thomas, who had that weird redshirt sophomore season. T.Y. Hilton and Stephon and Tyreek Hill. Hilton's the last one that we hadn't quite talked about yet. And I wasn't quite sure. I'm assuming it was a size thing. Do you remember anything about Hilton? When I looked into it, he had over 1,000 yards as a freshman at Florida International. So that to me kind of gives him the clean bill of you're certified good at the game.
Yep.
If you're doing that as a freshman. Kind of why like I've never quit Christian Kirk is he had just this ridiculous like 1,000 yards with 700 special teams yards as a freshman at, what was it, Texas A&M or something like
Texas
that.
Texas A&M, yep.
So there's guys like that where I'm like, hey, you know what? I don't even care what you did the rest of your career in college. If you crushed as a freshman, that's good enough for me. So yep. Hilton was, what was Hilton? Was he even 180? He might have been sub-180.
He was a little guy, and he went to a little school. He was at FIU. I don't think he might have been 180 soaking wet, but little guy, little school. I think that was the problem with T.Y., but very, very good.
All right, so now let's turn to the players that are about to get drafted next week, since I think that's what a lot of people want to know about. As we've talked about this, we've kind of outlined how, like, generally the really fantasy relevant players, as we're listing them, they're usually an early declare. So if we're looking at some of these seniors for this upcoming draft, so we've hit on Olave. There's some concerns there. The next guy I want to talk about was Christian Watson. Small school guy, crazy athlete, big dude. Where are you at with someone like Christian Watson when you watch him on film and weigh all the variables together of, I assume, like bad quarterback play, since now we're talking about how, like, if you're at the small school, it probably means like your quarterback's not good. They're probably going to lock onto you.
Yeah. I think a lot of people get let me just clarify this for everybody, Larky. I like watching college football, right? I truly like Saturday is like my favorite day of the week. Sunday is just like job. I'm watching the NFL for fantasy scoring purposes, but I enjoy watching college football. I enjoy watching the tape, and like I just give my opinion of these players. But I am not oblivious to data, right? Like I'm utilizing that and appreciating it. Because it is something that you can quantify with historical data. So when it comes to Christian Watson, while I love the athleticism and I love, you know, the speed and the size, and I got to see him at the Senior Bowl, and I love how fluid he is when he breaks down his routes, I'm also looking like this dude was an FCS wide receiver that really did nothing until that final season. And while I understand the quarterback play, you know, wasn't great, he's one of the guys for me where if he turns out to be the next Calvin Johnson, then I will be okay missing on Christian Watson. That's just if I have to spend, because I think he's going to get enough draft capital to get elevated up rookie draft boards, but if I have to spend a premium pick in order to get Christian Watson, I have no problem trading out of that pick and missing on that player. Sometimes I ask myself that, Josh. I'm like, if I miss on a guy, who would I like be banging my head against the table saying why? And the example I use with that is Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Jonathan Taylor. If you made that decision knowing for most people, Clyde was RB5 at best for most people going into that draft, and we elevated him because of landing spot. Like, if I were to ask myself that, Ray, you know what Jonathan Taylor is, and you're going to pass on that for the unknown or just this landing spot? Like, that's one. If I'm in between a player like that, I'm like, who am I okay missing on? And Christian Watson is one of those guys for me. Like, if he hits, I'm okay missing on Christian Watson. I would be devastated, me personally, if I passed on Drake London or Treylon Burks and they fired opposed to Christian Watson. I'm not in on him at price point, man. I have concerns. I think he's a project. I don't think he's a, you know, easy bake oven ready to go in the NFL from day one. I think it might take him a year or two. And with wide receivers like that, you can always buy them in the offseason, because if they fail early, it's hard for a receiver to retain that value year to year in dynasty. It's not like quarterback. It's not like running back. Receiver fails in year one, unless they flash late, it's hard for them to keep that same value that they had going into that rookie season.
Makes me think of someone who I've come around on, Michael Pittman. Michael Pittman didn't do much as a rookie. It was a very weak depth chart. He has Phillip Rivers, so there's good quarterback play. I think he had like 500 yards. Really just, I think he had one good, he had that one good game where I think he had like 100-something yards and he had a long touchdown. Outside of that, he really just was not heavily targeted. And then his year two, he absolutely killed it. And pretty much every advanced metric I've seen, the guy's just an absolute superstar. I'm all in on Pittman for this year. But it's funny, like, even though he had such a good year two, the dynasty value on Pittman still hasn't caught up. And like, I think he's a good dynasty buy based on the production you're going to get. But do I think that Michael Pittman at this point, like, he's going to need like one, maybe even two more seasons like last year to actually like reestablish, like, I know you've said it before, it's like the brand equity of this player. And it's very interesting where if you don't just come out firing from the start, you have to do so much more on top of that for the community to be like, oh, okay, you can come back in the circle now.
Josh, I remember it was after the 2018 season, people were valuing DJ Moore so ridiculously high in Dynasty. He had 780 receiving yards in his rookie season. If a rookie in today's NFL goes out there and gives you 780, regardless if that's a good number or not based on threshold, the perception is, well, that's dog shit. You know what I mean? Like, 780 yards, that's all you could muster up as a rookie. We got, you know, hell, even Devonta Smith got over 900 yards and Elijah Moore had 500 in like two games. You can only get 780? That's just not cutting it today, right? I don't know if it's a shift in the dynasty culture. I don't know if it's, I blame Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. And I think people keep chasing, like, let's find those guys, when literally those two did stuff that the NFL has never seen, like, since, hadn't seen since like Randy Moss. You know, those are, I don't think those should be the standards of players that we're chasing. Like, I think they are just so much better than everybody else. Like, They shouldn't even be in conversations of trying to find the next Ja'Marr Chase or the next Justin Jefferson. Like, those guys just don't come around often, and we just so happen to have them in back-to-back years.
That's true. Been spoiled. So I quickly pulled up new Steelers receiver Miles Boykin. He was cut from the Ravens. And Miles Boykin honestly just looks like Christian Watson. 4 years at Notre Dame. Doesn't do anything until his senior season. He's 6'4", 220. He ran a 4.42. Basically like 95th percentile or better in every size adjusted metric for athleticism. And he hasn't done anything. And he was a round three pick. And honestly, Christian Watson, like, statistically looks no different really than a Miles Boykin. And that's pretty concerning to me just from the stats perspective. So like you saw it on, like you see it on the film. I see it in the numbers. Christian Watson, definitely a very, very high risk player to draft. Couple more. So Alec Pierce was 4 years at Cincinnati. Statistically, I never thought he was all that spectacular, but the guy is an athletic freak. He's got good size. Where are you at with him? Since it seems like he's fairly locked into going in round two of the draft now. And we know from last episode, the hit rate's like 40% if you go round two. So like there's something there potentially, but I think he's trending like one of those players that is part of that 60%, not the 40% that hit the 60% that did not fire at the NFL level.
Yeah, I'm not pushing my chips in on Alec Pierce. Love the athleticism. I mean, and I'm looking at just, I'm fine missing on him. I don't see what everybody else sees. And sometimes these guys test a hell of a lot faster than they play. I think Pierce is fine, but we're not talking about just trying to draft wide receiver 39, wide receiver 44. Like, I want some guys that are difference makers that are going to score some points. I think he'll be fine in best ball if he gets the draft capital. He's got the speed to pop some, you know, some deep plays here and there. But in start your lineup leagues, I've got zero interest in Pierce, man. Another one of those guys, Josh, he's probably not going to produce as a rookie, right? So if I do like him, if I do like the athleticism and maybe I like the landing spot, he's one of those guys that you can buy in the offseason after he does absolutely nothing this year.
All right, last name before we leave everyone with a dynasty buy and a dynasty sell going into the draft. So Jahan Dotson had pretty much he had 884 receiving yards in 9 games as a junior. So basically 100 yards a game as a junior at Penn State. Goes out and he has basically 100 yards per game again as a senior. Just unbelievable production. But he's very small. He is that 4-year receiver. It seems like he I don't even know, maybe 50-50 sneaks into the first round or goes really early round 2, kind of like like Elijah Moore, kind of that smaller receiver. The Moore was an early declare. How are you at with Jahan Dotson? Since I feel like he's an interesting one where after kind of the I posted something on Twitter where I was like, pretty much once you have like Burks, London, Olave, Jameson Williams, Garrett Wilson, you've got those big 5 receivers. And then there's kind of like this smorgasbord where it's like Pickens, Dotson, Sky Moore, Christian Watson. There's so many guys that can sort of get tossed in there. What do you think about Dotson? Since I feel like Pickens, it seems to me like it's obvious how he has this pretty crazy upside.
Yeah.
But someone like Dotson, I'm a little unsure. He's smaller. Yeah. But from what I've heard, I mean, he's good at the catch point. So like how do you factor that in? Like if the guy's looking good on tape, but at the same time you're like, well, this guy's pretty small. He played at Penn State.
Yeah.
How are you evaluating him?
Yeah, I think it is the film, right? And you do see the athleticism in which he tested, it shows up on tape. You know, I think it's, you try to remove some of the bias, but Penn State's done a good job of producing wide receivers, right? Allen Robinson, Mike Gesicki, Chris Godwin, like they've had some good ones come out in recent memory. And Jahan Dotson, you could 52.884, you know, as a junior is nothing to throw away in 9 games. And let's not forget that 2020 season was the COVID year where there was no kind of preseason practice. Like they just kind of started, like the Big Ten was like, all right, we're going to play. And, you know, I don't even believe he played in the bowl game, but it's pretty good numbers for him. But it's something where you just see it and you're like, okay, this guy can play. And if he gets the requisite draft capital, I'll just bet on the talent, you know, how he plays wide receiver, and hopefully he gets it done. But again, I don't think Jahan Dotson has top 12 upside. You know, I don't think that's what you're looking at. I think you're looking at a good, you know, wide receiver too, somebody like that that can boom and give you some big weeks here and there. But he's nobody that you're drafting as your WR1 and feeling great about going into the season in year two or year in beyond.
So what's a floor outcome and a ceiling outcome for Dotson?
Oh, Josh, I'm so bad at these. Floor outcome. I mean, I could see him. I could definitely see his career starting off Christian Kirk-esque, like not the guy. There's somebody else there. I don't think Jahan Dotson's getting drafted to be the guy. So he's going to have to be like a really, really good number two in order to kind of make a name for himself, man. It's tough. I don't want to give you a ceiling, or I think the floor is, honestly, with a guy like Dotson, the floor is one of those players that every year you're just like, this is the year. I can't wait. Like, this is the Corey Davis fifth-year breakout. And then the ceiling for Jahan Dotson is Deontay Johnson. I think he could be a Deontay Johnson-level wide receiver in the NFL. That's, you get a lot of comparisons of him and Deontay. I think they have similar play styles. So, and even with Deontay, he didn't start off as the main target getter as a rookie. I think it took him until, what was it, year 2 you saw the flashes, but it was really year 3 where he took off. I think Jahan Dotson can follow a similar path.
All right. I'm okay with that. I, t- take a flyer on potentially the next Deontay, potentially just someone terrible. Dotson's probably not too much on my radar. I think I'm probably just trading out of that pick, and I'm like, hey, if I have an early second, would you just know, like, you have the 201, 202, and you're looking at like a Dotson or something, would you just flip that for a 2023 second, and that you don't really care like where you think it's going to be, that you're just like, let me get out of this pick? Or are you taking someone like a Dotson there going, you know what, the profile's good enough, the draft capital's good enough?
For me, he's around my cutoff point. Like, I would want him, but here's the thing though, Josh, I think other people want him too. And I think you can even, if you told me Jahan Dotson or 2023 first, I'm not even projecting mid to high, I would take the shot in 2023. If you even told me a 2024 first rounder in rookie drafts, I would consider that for Jahan Dotson, because I know that class on paper looks really, really freaking special. So I'd be willing to move off of any second rounder for a future first.
Sounds good. One last thing before we get to our dynasty buys and sells. I think something that's just kind of interesting is just how much the wide receiver position has changed in terms of the value of it, what it's commanding on the open market. And we're talking about Jahan Dotson and Chris Olave. Like, I think this guy's going to be a really, really good number two in an offense. Yet these are guys where Olave, 100%, he's going round one. Dotson, maybe 50-50 chance of going round one. And I kind of wonder at this point how much of that is the emphasis on the passing game and that passing's important. And how much of that is teams going, you know what? Yeah, passing's good, but what we really don't want to do is pay a receiver open market prices. And that, like, Christian Kirk, if he's getting almost $20 million, and we think that Jahan Dotson or Chris Olave, kind of like a middling outcome would be just, oh, this is Christian Kirk, great. Then, yeah, we burned the first or the early second on this guy, but at least we're paying this guy a few million a year, yep, as opposed to Kirk getting like $17 million a year. So I wonder if teams are thinking about that more now, and that they too think, oh, Dotson, this looks like a really good number two, but we'll still take him at the end of the first.
And I think this problem is going to continue, Josh, because wide receiver talent is just being developed at a crazy high proficient rate from all the high school camps. Like, these kids are coming in as true freshmen and getting opportunities as true freshmen, as true sophomores, and they're just dominating. And they're coming from these schemes that they just throw the ball all over the field. Like, they can just walk in and produce. So if I'm an NFL team and I'm thinking, man, I got to give Deebo Samuel $40 million at 26 years old after he's been run into the ground, or I can go draft Deontay Johnson Jr. or the next Calvin Johnson and Christian Watson or whomever it is, from a cost-saving standpoint, the New England Patriots have been doing it with the running back position for years, right? Outside of their blunder with Sony Michel, they just find guys off of the street and just plug them in and cycle through them every couple of years. So it's I think the true litmus test is going to be Cincinnati and what they do with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, because I think that's when we're going to see, because all of those guys are going to be up for extensions or tags around the same time. So we're going to see how valuable NFL teams feel these wide receivers are, or are we going to see Tyreek Hill in his prime get traded, you know, to a team that thinks they're a piece away? It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it'll probably also depend on how some of these contracts age. If Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, if these deals, like DeAndre Hopkins, the deal's not looking so great anymore. I feel like the Cardinals fans were laughing to the bank, and now they're sort of like, well, this might not actually be the greatest. I mean, I still think they won the trade, but they're like, this might not actually be the greatest wide receiver contract of all time. So it'll be interesting to see how these age. So we've been hinting. We've talked about this player several times. We're going to go rapid fire to get everyone out of here. We each have a few bullet points for why this guy is a dynasty sell or dynasty buy. Ray, kick everyone off. They've got their notepads out. Give everyone a dynasty sell. We're almost at the NFL draft. Lots going on. Who are you selling?
Yeah, and this is not because I dislike the player, but Deebo Samuel's got to go. If I have him on my roster, he's got to go. I know he just turned 26 years old. This was his first healthy season since his senior year in college, and he smashed this year, and I hope he gets paid. I'm all in favor of athletes getting money. But right now, being valued as wide receiver 7 in Dynasty on Keep Trade Cut, You remember going into last season, people didn't even want Deebo Samuel. It was all about Brandon Ayuk. And it'd be interesting to see what their ADP was last year going into it. I have no clue. I didn't look it up. But I know everybody was over Brandon Ayuk. I do not like the way that they utilize him. You cannot run toss sweeps with your wide receiver that has a history of injuries. And I don't think Kyle Shanahan gives a damn. If Deebo Samuel is on the team, they're going to do the same shit that they did last year. And I'm just not betting on him replicating that production that literally was his best season as a pro. It was his first healthy season. But all the way from dynasty wide receiver, he had to have been in the 20s to wide receiver 7 in one season. I'd be cashing out on Deebo. And I know there's some contract stuff going on. He's going to get paid by somebody and have that insulation. But for me, if I have him in dynasty, he helped you win a championship last year, and he'd be off my roster today.
So you have no arguments from me there. If you want to know more about Deebo Samuel as well for redraft, I have a piece out on FTN Fantasy. It's free to read. It's my two biggest fades early in redraft for 2022. Not going to say the one guy, but the other guy, it's Deebo Samuel. So I lay out a very big case for why this season is not the season to draft him in the second round. Raise out on at that dynasty price. Me too. My dynasty sell is Javonte Williams. And I'm going to go back to keep trade cut. For those unfamiliar, you've all played the game out there, marry, fuck, kill. Whether you want to admit it or not. And I'm not even saying this just to be like, just to be edgy. You can go to the About Us section of KeepTradeCut.com and they reference that game. We all know how to play that game. Keep Trade Cut, you basically have to keep a player, trade a player, and cut a player. And they pepper you with those questions as you use the site. It's free to use. And they crowdsource dynasty rankings through the Keep Trade Cut game. So the dynasty RB2, according to consensus, is Javonte Williams. That to me is just absolutely wild. Do I think he's a very good talent? Yes. Do I think he's going to do much better in fantasy this year than last year? Yes. But I think Denver is probably going to draft a decent running back, probably a pass catcher if Melvin Gordon doesn't re-sign there. Javonte Williams, his value is at sky high. I really think if you have him, you should be trading him away right before the draft happens. I have him in a couple leagues. I hope my league mates aren't listening to this because I'm trying to flip Javonte right now before the draft happens and some kind of decent looking running back goes to them in the fourth round and takes a little notch out of that value. So we haven't even seen him be a bell cow. Do I think he's going to? Yes. He's not the fastest guy. Melvin Gordon was actually significantly faster, according to all the next gen stats last year, than Javonte. And yeah, I don't know. Do I think Javonte Williams is an excellent player? Yes. But the RB2? No. There's other guys where if you can give me another highly productive young running back and a first, yeah, you can have Javonte. So that's what I'm looking to do right now is getting out from Javonte while this price is astronomical. There's pretty much no way it's going to go up. He's not going to catch Jonathan Taylor at the RB1 spot. So it's going to be downhill. Now, Ray, who are you buying in Dynasty? On a more friendly, positive note, which player do you like at their cost?
Yeah, I'm all in on Allen Robinson. Sign me up for A-Rob in L.A., I know he's going to be 29 years old when the season starts. Wide receivers seem to, not all the time, but age just a little bit better than the 31-year-old running back, playing with the best quarterback that he's had in his career. It's been a couple of down years in Chicago for Allen Robinson, but I don't believe that his production dipped due to his lack of skill. I think it's the fact that he had to play with Andy Dalton and Justin Fields and, you know, didn't even really get a chance to play with Fields, but he had to deal with Dalton and other random quarterbacks, Nick Foles, the past couple of years. Walking to an offense where they truly consolidate targets to five pass catchers. The Rams throw to their wide receiver one, Cooper Kupp, the wide receiver two, whom that was Robert Woods, but now that will be Allen Robinson. They throw to Tyler Higbee, they throw to Van Jefferson, and then they'll toss it around to, you know, the running back from time to time. They consolidate their passing offense with Stafford, who read up for a 3-year deal. They gave Allen Robinson, what, $30, $40 million guaranteed. He's only going to face single coverage with Cooper Kupp on one side. Allen Robinson should walk into this role, and unlike Odell Beckham, who was traded midseason, A-Rob gets the whole offseason to learn the McVay offense, to get acclimated with Matt Stafford. I think he could be walking into an 1,100-yard floor type season this year for A-Rob. And if that's the case, at wide receiver 42 on keep, trade, cut, even in a 2-3-year window, sign me up for somebody that's going to help me win a championship in 2022 and 2023.
I really like the Robinson call. And everyone out there that uses Robert Woods against him, they're like, dude, Robert Woods sucked. Why are you going to draft? Why do you want the wide receiver 2 on the Rams? I think we can all agree Robinson's better than Woods. And a fun fact, using the numbers, Robert Woods was actually the wide receiver 17 per game in PPR when he went down. So you're looking at someone that was like a high-end wide receiver 2, and we think Robinson's better. So just get that through your head that, like, if he's only Robert Woods, you're still getting someone that's vastly exceeding what he's being valued at.
And here's the thing, Larky, real quick. There are two different receivers. He fits more into what Odell Beckham Jr. liked to do, which was go downfield. Give me the air yards. Give me the valuable targets. Robert Woods was a behind the line of scrimmage, short and intermediate kind of guy. I think Allen Robinson fits right into that OBJ realm of what they like to do. And Matthew Stafford loves to chuck the ball deep. I mean, he throws for a lot of passing yards, throws a lot of picks. I think this is prime smash opportunity for A-Rob this year.
Yeah, Stafford hucks it and chucks it. I actually remember I took some lines in the playoffs, some over-unders, and one of them was like the Matthew Stafford. It was like over-under 37.5 longest completion. And gut feel, I was like, oh my God, take the under. Are you kidding me? 37.5. And then I pulled the numbers and it was like all but like 4 games that year. He hit whatever the number was. And I was like, oh, smash the over. I had no idea. So yeah, I think a really perfect fit for what the Rams want to do. Last dynasty buy for you guys. I've talked about him a couple places, but the FTN audience deserves to know in full that Leonard Fournette is just a screaming buy in Dynasty. The fire department that lives across the street from me is currently trying to put out this Leonard Fournette fire. They can't even put it out though. They're trying to fan the flames. It won't be put out. So one concept that I've been exploring with theoretically is that in Dynasty, if you don't have a super young super back, like Jonathan Taylor, Javonte Williams, DeAndre Swift, you don't have these guys where 2, 3, 4, 5 years away, they're probably going to do something for your fantasy team. I think pretty much every other running back, you should look in a 2-year window. And that after 2 seasons, like who even knows what's going to happen with them? In 2 years, like Dalvin Cook, Leonard Fournette, Joe Mixon, these guys could be practically out of the league for all I know. So I think with all these old running backs, 2-year window. And if I'm looking at Leonard Fournette compared to Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, I mean, hell, even David Montgomery. Yeah, he's a few years younger, but like, do I think 2022 and 2023 season? So going in, do I think David Montgomery is going to do anything in 2024? That is not even slightly on my radar. So David Montgomery, he's in my 2-year window. Like Jonathan Taylor, yeah, he's going to be really good in 2024. Montgomery, I have no idea. He could be a backup at that point, a committee back. All the running backs like that. Derrick Henry, like when you think 2 years from now in 2024, they're going to be toast. Leonard Fournette, he's a pass catcher. He's a goal line back. He's with Tom Brady in one of, if not the best offenses in the NFL. Like when you're projecting offenses, they're going to be top 3 to 5 just every single year. If Brady's the quarterback, boom, top 3, top 5 offense. And Fournette is the bell cow. He was paid a 3-year contract with pretty much 2 guaranteed years. So he's in this 2-year window where he's going to be on the team. You need Leonard Fournette on your team. He was a top 5 running back per game, basically. Like whenever he was healthy, he had just that one injury at the end of the year. It should not affect him at all heading into next year. So Leonard Fournette is just a super dynasty buy. Do you have any takes on this 2-year window, or we're just going to get out of here?
No, I love it, man. I think you're really onto something with some of these guys. Like you said, the name of the game is not acquire as many young assets that don't help you win dynasty championships. It's acquire the players who do. And I think you've got some of these running backs like a Leonard Fournette where, listen, I love Isaiah Spiller. You know this, Larky. I know you hate him. I know you're not a fan. But as young as he is, there's no doubt in my mind that for the next 2 years, Leonard Fournette is a better fantasy asset than whatever draft capital Spiller gets. Leonard Fournette's probably going to outproduce that young rookie. So if you're trying to win, which is the name of the damn game, I think there are quite a few of these older veterans that you can play in two-year windows. And Leonard Fournette paired with Tom Brady in that offense, I think it's just, I mean, how high could he finish the season? I mean, does he have top, I don't want to be too conservative here, but top eight upside? And if you're telling me yes, then hell yes, sign me up for Leonard Fournette in 2022.
Yeah, so I'm pulling it up right now. So Leonard Fournette, if you remember everyone out there, he was not the bell cow the first few weeks of the season. He was splitting work. And still, even with that split, he was the RB3 in fantasy points per game last year. He had over 18 fantasy points a game, the RB3. So dare I say it, he has RB1 per game upside. If we're just counting the games where he is the full-fledged starter, the total workhorse in a top five offense, he's basically what we want, like a Breece Hall to be per game, where we're like, oh, if Breece Hall goes to the Bills, it is game on. Well, you have that right now with Leonard Fournette, and you can get him for, I mean, like a late first. It's unbelievable. Like, you have the 110, and it's like, oh God, like everyone's gone. Do I go for Jahan Dotson, Christian Watson, all my favorites? The old band is out there. You could flip that pick for Leonard Fournette. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Was a good outro, Larky. I thought that was good.
Saw you do that and I was like, oh yeah, that was not bad.
I was gonna roll you off and do say something, but you stole my thunder, because I was gonna say, there you have it, the takeaway from the show: don't draft Jahan Dotson, trade for Leonard Fournette. But you hit it, because you said Jahan Dotson, Christian Watson. That was it. That was the outro. That's the outro.
I was gonna say, I'm gonna throw this in the outro, since I feel like my old company, we had the outro. I don't know if you, did you and Derek do the outro? I often don't listen to the outros.
No.
It's just not necessarily my style. But for those that like the outros, I think this is a worthy outro.
Yeah, this is good. You did good. Good stuff.